When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Thursday. No, it's Wednesday. Happy Wednesday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Coming up on the show, we will go into the big news of the day from the NFL as Stephon Diggs has been moved from the Buffalo Bills to the Houston Texans, and the WrestleMania 40 preview continues looking at the legacy of The Rock. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you're looking for Flames or Raptors, there is Blasty Banter and Dynamite issue out, episode out right now, so check those out. Also, been doing a lot over on twitch.tv/primetimepk. Those videos up on YouTube as well. But I want to begin with a debate that's been going on over the last little bit. And I mean, over the last, like, decade or so, but specifically over the last few days. To say women's sports is having a moment doesn't quite do it justice. Women's sports are arriving. They have arrived. You have record-breaking day after record-breaking day when it comes to attendance and TV numbers and all of these things. What I don't get is people's, like, absolute falling over themselves to have to shit on it in some way, shape, or form. Look, if it's not for you, it's not for you. I think you're missing out, but look, not every sport is for me, right? I've tried with most of them, but cricket ain't my jam. There are some others, you know, the IndyCar racing, not for me. Formula One for sure. NASCAR, kinda. But that one, yeah. So, like, there are plenty of sports out there. You can find your own thing. You don't have to shit on someone else's. And what boggles my mind is that people go out of their way to let you know that they think less of it and that they aren't watching necessarily. And like, there are certain things where it's like, I can understand, but it's 2024. The world is burning down. There's wars happening all over the place. We had a pandemic 4 years ago. I don't get why you need to shit on what makes other people happy to a certain extent, right? Like, there are crimes that make people happy. That's a fine thing to be upset about. But in terms of what they watch for sports, just let them. Like, when you're scrolling on TikTok, you can, by all means, just keep scrolling. If you see someone saying like, oh man, this Iowa LSU game is great, instead of going, name seven players from this game, which must have been very difficult to tweet after having your knuckles drag on the ground all day, instead of doing that, you can simply just keep scrolling and just not say anything. You cannot have an opinion on whether people should be watching women's sports or not. The Bobby Ryan name seven players thing is so stupid. There are NHL, NBA, and MLB games every night that I'm not going to be able to name seven players on. And I consider myself a pretty smart sports fan. But like Blackhawks Islanders last night, I could probably get to seven. I'd have to work at it a little bit. And honestly, five of them would have to come from the Islanders. So that is such a dumb way of looking at it. And like for a long time, the second women's sports would be brought up, whether it was talking about international hockey or the two women's leagues that were going on for a long time, or the WNBA or the women's Final Four, because heaven forbid we call it March Madness. The second you brought that up in the past, immediately you would get, whether I was doing it on 960 on the text line or tweets or whatever, no one cares, no one's watching it, they can't draw money, why would anyone waste their time with this? And all of those people have been proven aggressively wrong this season. So now they have to announce that, well, they're not part of the sheep that are following along or watching. Like, why? I don't understand why with this you need to announce you're not watching. There are, I think, five games in the NHL tonight. Probably not going to watch any of them. I don't feel the need to announce it on social media the way other people need to announce, well, I, for one, am not watching Iowa against LSU. It's like, cool. I don't know what you're trying to prove with this whole thing. It has just become so frustrating that, like, for a long time, people had this thing to step on because there wasn't a real investment in women's sports. Well, now it's happening. And that investment is absolutely paying off. And these people are scrambling. So it's like, well, are these guys actually stars? Coming from a guy who's just grasping onto relevancy anyway. It is so frustrating. It's sports, man. Let people enjoy it. The people who enjoy it, enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, just keep scrolling. Or, like, stop by. Maybe see if you will enjoy it. Caitlin Clark was excellent last night, or the other night, against Iowa. The women's Final Four, probably going to be an absolute thriller. So is the men's. You can watch both. It's allowed. Anyway, let's get into some football talk. The Buffalo Bills making a blockbuster deal as they send Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans, along with a draft pick for a second round pick next year. Let's start with the Buffalo Bills in this spot. I was on Sportsnet 960 The Fan earlier today, and I said they kind of go from a team that needed a wide receiver to a team that needed a wide receiver. Diggs was not a factor for this team in the second half of the season. And in fact, in a couple of games, actually hindered this team, I think, and missed a couple of plays that significantly hurt this team in some games. So, like, they needed a wide receiver reboot anyway. This just really drives it home for me. The timing of it is a little odd, though. A, it's $31 million in dead cap that they're going to be taking on to make this move. But also, they are still the clear favorites in the AFC East, right? Like, the Dolphins have been bled dry this offseason with a mass exodus out of there that has me really concerned about them. And the Jets are relying on a quarterback pushing 40 who is coming off of an Achilles injury with an offensive lineman who, while good, also gets hurt a lot. And a really good young wide receiver. But then a number two wide receiver who, while good, gets hurt a lot. Like, they don't exactly strike fear in the hearts of many. So Buffalo still feels like a team that should be the front runner in this division. They're probably going to take a wide receiver in the draft, but they're not drafting high enough to be able to move up into the top three to get one of the three real big ones in Neighbors, Adunze, or Harrison. So they'll probably have to, Xavier Henry, I think is his name, from Texas. They're probably going to have to go with that. I wonder if they go in the I don't want to say the bargain bin, but going for some of the veteran, like, maybe guys like Odell Beckham Jr. is available. Michael Thomas is available. I think Hunter Renfrow would be really good for them. But this is a full statement of confidence that Josh Allen doesn't need a Stephon Diggs to take this team to where they want to get to. And instead, they feel like it's better, given how things went down in training camp last year and how the season went down, maybe it's better to just leave that alone and let this team really be Josh Allen's team. The Chargers are kind of doing the same thing right now with Justin Herbert. Obviously, it's paid off for Patrick Mahomes, but he's Patrick Mahomes. And he doesn't have to beat Patrick Mahomes. So it's an interesting gamble, but it feels like the first move for the Buffalo Bills. For the Texans, this is fantastic. You already have Collins and Dell as a really good 1-2 punch in your wide receiver room. Adding Diggs to it, even if he has taken a step back, that's fine. He can be number three. I'm sure he'll take to that very well. But, like, skill-wise, if he's the number three, that's fine. They also have Dalton Schultz, who they brought back, who obviously had a chemistry with CJ Stroud right away. And they've added Joe Mixon to, I think, bolster up their running back room a little bit. This offense has a ton of weapons. You have a coach that you feel comfortable with. I think a defense that you feel all right about. They are so clearly the favorites in the AFC South. But think about it. Who's obviously better than Houston in the AFC right now? Kansas City, 100%. Baltimore, I would put Baltimore in that category. After that, who can you clearly say is better than Houston? Buffalo? Well, they just got worse in this exact trade. And they've lost quite a few starters this offseason. I don't trust Cleveland's quarterback, although the defense is really good. Miami, just talked about them. And the Bengals probably bounce back this year, but they're going to be losing T. Higgins. So can you really confidently say that they are going to be better than the Houston Texans? I think the Texans have a real shot to make some real noise in the AFC. Coming up on Football Friday, we're going to continue talking about all of this from a fantasy football standpoint. That's kind of the lens that we'll be looking at. And also through the draft and seeing how this maybe changes things. The entire offseason, we're going to be looking at it through all of that. By the way, you can follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Primetime Klein, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK. You can email the show, CouchPotatoDiary@yahoo.com. All right, WrestleMania 40 is right around the corner, and one of the big gets for the WWE this year has been the Brahma Bull, the Great One, the People's Champion, the Final Boss, The Rock. Why is it such a big deal that The Rock is back? Well, let me tell you with this WrestleMania 40 legacy look. All right, so the big headliner for this year's WrestleMania is that The Rock is back, teaming with his cousin Roman Reigns in the first night of WrestleMania, and will probably have a say in the second night of WrestleMania. So I wanted to just go through The Rock's career and see why it's such a big deal that he is back. So this is a legacy look for Dwayne The Rock Johnson. You know how the story starts. Had $7, came to Canada, went to the Stampeders, left the Stampeders, and moved to the world of professional wrestling. Early on, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, had an ally in Pat Patterson, and really got his start in Jerry Lawler's United States Wrestling Association under the amazing name of Flex Cavana. And I just want to say, I'm looking right into the camera right now. I know I'm going to be reading off of that script a lot, but there, camera, right now. If we do a Rock showcase next year in the video game, I'm going to need a playable Flex Cavana player. That's all I'm asking is, instead of having to download it or whatever, give me an honest-to-God Flex Cavana character in the video game. That's all I'm asking for. So anyway, they get rid of that name because of course they do. And Rocky Maivia debuts in the WWF, gets the, that's a blue chipper right there from Jim Ross, only it sounded more like Jim Ross because he said it, at Survivor Series 1996, comes in as a surprise addition to a team. So that's in November. By February of 97, he's won the Intercontinental Championship, defeating Hunter Hearst Helmsley. His first WrestleMania is all the way back at WrestleMania 13, and to tie it in with the whole Bloodline thing, his match is against the Sultan, who you probably know as Rikishi. So there, just fun little family tie-in there. The crowd went mild for that particular one. It really got hot when his dad, Rocky Johnson, came in and cleaned house at the end of the match after the Iron Sheik was attacking him, but the crowd never really got into him. And actually, quite the opposite, started to reject him. He loses the Intercontinental title to Owen Hart, and then a couple of months later, he legitimately hurts his knee in a match against Mankind. And I think that did wonders for him, because nothing was changing, crowd reactions were getting bad, and famously, he's seeing signs of die, Rocky, die, and hearing Rocky sucks chants as it goes on. So, they let him be a heel, and I do think that knee injury really does help pivot him to this next chapter here, and really does help launch the star that is The Rock. He comes back as a heel in the Nation of Domination. He's referring to himself in the third person as The Rock. For a little bit, it was The Rock, Rocky Maivia, but it was The Rock. He calls out the Die Rocky Die signs and all of that, and you just immediately see he's more comfortable. There's any personality in it aside from the weird hair and the, I still don't know what these were supposed to be, and the, yeah, we're gonna go, and I'm gonna try really, really hard, and I'm gonna win matches, yeah. Instead of that, there was an actual personality that started to mesh with the times of the late 90s in the World Wrestling Federation. He becomes the Intercontinental Champion after Stone Cold Steve Austin forfeits it following a win by Stone Cold at an In Your House in December of 97. Those two had feuded for a little bit, but it was mainly Ken Shamrock that The Rock would feud with all the way through WrestleMania 14, where The Rock would defend his Intercontinental title there. Ken Shamrock is such an underrated figure, I think, in The Rock story. Obviously, there is the big moment that everyone turns to where The Rock hits the bejesus out of him with a steel chair right to the brain, and that causes, like, You look at it now and it's not great. But I think Ken Shamrock was a real good kind of launching point for The Rock here. The night after WrestleMania 14, I think there's an interesting setup here. Sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit. But the Royal Rumble leading into that, it's so clearly Austin's time, right? Like, we've had Austin 316. We've had, like, WrestleMania 13 with Bret Hart. And then in the Royal Rumble, Austin eliminates The Rock to get this. So Rock is so close, but he's still not there yet. So we spend a year building up Austin, and this was kind of your sign that now this is another guy who we're going to put a lot of our focus on in a post-Shawn Michaels, we're a few months post-Bret Hart as well. This is going to be another one of the guys who we're going to focus on. He debuts a new Intercontinental Championship the night after WrestleMania and takes over the nation from Farouk rather rudely and starts a bit of a feud there, beating him at In Your House. And that kicks off one of the first real true defining feuds of The Rock's time, and that is the Nation DX one. You know the skit that absolutely you couldn't do today, where DX is making fun of the Nation and Triple H is the croc, and that whole thing. Wildly entertaining. A lot of it really insensitive when you just see what they all look like. But still, that was a key part of a big rivalry. And these two were the ones who really showed that they were elevated, right? Like, Triple H was getting the spotlight for the first time. The Rock was getting the spotlight for the first time. And they both really shined. They faced off in the quarterfinals of the King of the Ring that year. The Rock ends up losing to Triple H. And then, no, I think I might have that wrong, actually. I think he might have beat him. Either way, neither of them win the King of the Ring. The two face off in 2 out of 3 falls match at Fully Loaded, with The Rock retaining his Intercontinental Championship, but there was a bit of controversy, which leads to the ladder match at SummerSlam 1998. You want to talk about a match that elevated two performers to main event status? It is this match here. Like, we talk about the Intercontinental title elevating performers. This was the time where the IC title is like, these two guys are really showing that they are next when it comes to being the stars in the World Wrestling Federation. It was a real oh shit moment for both of them. And so because of that, fan support is really starting to grow for The Rock. He's the people's champ. He's all of these different things that are getting people like really behind him. He's becoming cool. And so he turns on his Nation mates, feuds with Mark Henry, feuds with D'Lo Brown, leading into Survivor Series 1998. It's the Deadly Games tournament for the WWF Championship, and the corporation at the time is behind Mankind. Until the finals, when they turn on Mankind, The Rock turns heel again and goes from being the people's champion to the corporate champion. And I think, like, the Nation Rock was good, but this is where things, like, really shoot to the moon for The Rock, as he is the champion here. At Rock Bottom, Mankind has Rock in a mandible claw, but Vince McMahon, dastardly heel that he is, overturns the decision and say, well, Rock never tapped out, so he doesn't lose the championship. So, sorry, Mick, you're not going to get it at this one, which leads to January 4th, 1999. That episode of Raw is one of the final nails in the coffin of the Monday Night War, specifically of WCW, where it's the, that'll put butts in the seats, where on a taped edition of Raw, Mankind wins the title. Tony Schiavone on the other channel, from direction from Eric Bischoff, gives that result away, and people en masse flip over to the USA Network to see Mankind beat The Rock for the WWF Championship with help from Stone Cold Steve Austin. Just 20 days later, at the Royal Rumble, they have the I Quit match, which will go down in infamy for not the best of reasons. On this night, apparently, I just read this now, actually, The Rock was only supposed to hit Mankind 5 times in the head with a steel chair, which still is a lot. Rock hit him 11 times with a chair. So the spot was supposed to be, he hits him once, twice, thrice, fourth, and a fifth time, and he ends up being in the middle of the thing. Rock puts the mic to him, and a thing plays over the loudspeaker. Actually a pretty creative finish. Because earlier in the night on Heat, Mankind was like, you'll never get me to say, I quit. You want me to scream, I quit, or whatever. And so they tape that and run it over the speakers, but make it sound like Mankind was saying it after he had been knocked unconscious by the steel chair shots. So creative finish, really disturbing, given what we know about concussions and brains and stuff like that now, and a really difficult part of Beyond the Mat to watch with Mankind's family in attendance there. A week later, no one was in attendance on Sunday Night Heat as The Rock and Mankind participated in an empty arena match, a match that took place in an arena of 22,000 empty seats where any part of the facility could be used during the match. They brawled all over the place. Eventually, Mankind pins The Rock using a forklift to win the WWF Championship. The two would face off again at St. Valentine's Day Massacre in a last man standing match, which ends in a draw, meaning Mankind retains the title. The feud goes until Monday Night Raw the next night when, Raw is War the next night, when The Rock wins his third WWF Championship in a ladder match thanks to the debuting Big Show interfering on his behalf. And that is what ends up setting up the great rivalry of this era, The Rock against Stone Cold Steve Austin for the WWF Championship. But I do want to note, when a lot of people connect The Rock and Mankind, it's the Rock and Sock connection, and we'll get to that in a little bit. I think people really underestimate the importance of Mankind in the development of The Rock into a full character as a heel. Like, the chair shots are violent and would never happen today and shouldn't have happened then. But all of it created this more sadistic side of The Rock, that this even more arrogant side of The Rock, and really played off like that this is a guy, Hollywood good looks, obviously, going up against Mankind, who wears a mask, doesn't have the most athletic build in the world, but is just tough as hell and is going to give you everything he has. And that contrast between the two characters, I think, really did help elevate The Rock. And it sends him into this match against Stone Cold Steve Austin for the WWF Championship at WrestleMania 15. And these are the two defining stars of this era, and this is the first time they are clashing. So Austin really gets built from WrestleMania 13 to 14. The Rock really gets built from 14 through to 15. And then you have these two mega stars now who you have built up colliding at WrestleMania 15. Rock loses to Austin there and again at Backlash. The corporation then turns on him and The Rock feuds with Triple H, Undertaker, and the corporate ministry. After feuds with Triple H and Billy Gunn, we get the Rock and Sock connection. Leads to one of the biggest segments of all time. It gets an 8.4 rating from Nielsen. And it ends up with the This Is Your Life segment. It went way too long, but it was entertaining as hell and would go on to define the Rock and Sock connection. Their feuds were with The Undertaker and The Big Show, also some stuff with the New Age Outlaws, before eventually losing to the Hollies. That leads us to the Royal Rumble in 2000. But just a quick note here. Again, I feel like I'm skipping ahead on a few things. Again, Mankind's importance on The Rock. Obviously, when we think back on The Rock, it will be feuds with Stone Cold Steve Austin, probably John Cena, just because of recency, and Triple H because how important that was on their rise. But when we talk about rounding out The Rock as a character, it's Mankind who really drives home this corporate asshole, and then it's Mankind who really shows a bit more of a funnier side of The Rock as well, even though Rock is playing the annoyed straight man. And you have the skits with the phone where he's talking on the phone, and Mankind is like pouring his heart out, and The Rock's like, what are you talking about? And you see that The Rock has the phone the whole time. Just some really, really good stuff that I think showed how well-rounded Dwayne Johnson was as a character. At Royal Rumble 2000, Rock and Big Show leave the ring at the same time, creating the controversial finish that leads to a fatal four-way at WrestleMania 2000, and it was a McMahon in every corner. In the end, Vince ends up turning on The Rock and siding with Triple H. So he loses the title, gets it back against Triple H at Backlash, thanks to help from Stone Cold Steve Austin. Those two would have The Rock and Triple H, again, have an Iron Man match. Shawn Michaels is the referee, and we see the debut of The Undertaker. And I think it's interesting how many times throughout The Rock's run, he is attached to big moments for other people, right? Like, he is there for the big Mankind win. To get that title victory. He's in the match that propels Triple H into superstardom. Stone Cold Steve Austin was already a star, but he's the biggest rival Stone Cold Steve Austin has. And now The Undertaker debuting an entirely new character, and The Rock is involved with that as well. Rock lost that match, wins it back at the King of the Ring for the fifth time, pinning Vince McMahon in a six-man tag. That is just peak that time. It was Rock, I think it was Rock, Taker, and either, I think it was Rock, Taker, and Kane against Triple H, Vince, and Shane. And basically, whoever got the pinfall won the world title, and I think the tag team titles were on the line in there as well. And The Rock ends up pinning Vince, so he ends up winning the WWF Championship. The Rock would lose it to Kurt Angle, so now, big moment in Kurt Angle's career, he gets the WWF Championship going up against The Rock, starting a feud with the Rikishi, who did it for The Rock. That leads to that six-man Hell in a Cell match for the title, which again, Kurt Angle ends up winning. But at this point, like, Rock is a made man. He's wildly entertaining. Babyface heel, doesn't matter. People are behind him. He ends up winning the championship back. And wouldn't you know it, Stone Cold Steve Austin has once again won at the Royal Rumble, leading to, at that point, the biggest WrestleMania of all time. Still viewed as one of the greatest manias of all time. It is the reason why a generation of wrestling fans will think of The Rock and Stone Cold when My Way by Limp Bizkit plays. It is one of the all-time great builds for a championship match. For any match of any kind in professional wrestling. It is the gold standard for hyping up a wrestling match. In that match, Rock loses to Austin. Austin turns heel, starts a two-man power trip with Triple H, while The Rock goes off to act. He returns to a much different landscape, as it is now The Invasion. Rock comes back and wins the WCW Championship from Booker T at SummerSlam 2001. He loses the title to Chris Jericho, and then it is a winner-take-all match at Survivor Series, where The Rock ends up putting an end to the alliance of WCW and ECW. So following that, we have to unify the championships. It's the WWF and the WCW titles, and The Rock ends up losing to Chris Jericho, who ends up being the first ever undisputed champion. So again, to recap, Mankind gets one of his, maybe, probably his biggest win ever over The Rock. Undertaker debuts a character over The Rock. Triple H, in a feud with The Rock, elevates himself to main event status. Same thing with Kurt Angle. And now Chris Jericho ends up being tied to The Rock in his biggest moment to date, to that point, in the World Wrestling Federation. So not only is Rock like this mega star, but it seems at this point he's pretty unselfish with what he will do to help others get over at this particular time. The Rock goes away for a little bit. Or actually, no, he doesn't. He sticks around and ends up feuding with Hulk Hogan, as the NWO had come in, setting up the Icon vs. Icon match with Hogan at WrestleMania 18. He wins and leaves. And then he comes back a little bit and all of a sudden wins the undisputed title for his seventh championship reign, a record at the time, beating Kurt Angle and The Undertaker. But it's at this point, wrestling fans are changing a little bit. And this is where I think wrestling fans think they were a little bit smarter than they actually were. But one thing we knew is that The Rock was here for a good time, not a long time. And so, like, the crowd turns on him at WrestleMania X8, and they're never fully behind him to the point where they full-on again turn on Rock in his match against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam in 2002. Again, a match where Brock Lesnar wins his first championship, becoming the youngest WWE champion of all time. And so just add another one to the cornerstones that The Rock has helped over the years. But Rock is obviously frustrated with the crowd. He leaves again for the acting world, and he comes back in January of 2003, setting up another match with Hulk Hogan for No Way Out. He is at this point full heel. He's Hollywood Rock. He's doing like the feud with Hurricane that lasts a couple of weeks. He was in the Battle Royal for the number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship over on Raw. He leaves the match, goes and does commentary for a little bit, comes back, gets eliminated by Booker T. So he is left without a dance partner for WrestleMania 19. Well, wouldn't you know it, Stone Cold Steve Austin is as well. And these two have another phenomenal feud. And it doesn't get talked about a lot, but The Rock's promo the night of WrestleMania 19 is one of the great promos I have seen. This was, like, we didn't get pay-per-view where I lived in Saskatchewan. So this was, I went to a buddy's house who had a satellite dish so we could watch the pay-per-view. It's the first WrestleMania I watched live. And you're watching The Rock cut this promo, and it feels so impassioned. And it just drives home the importance of this, this whole thing of Act 1 and Act 2, they don't matter. But the only thing that matters, everyone remembers, Act 3, The Rock needs to beat Stone Cold Steve Austin. He hasn't beat Stone Cold. It's the only thing he hasn't done. And then he's like, at the end of the night, 1, 2, 3, finally! Takes the sunglasses off. Finally. And he ends up beating Stone Cold Steve Austin in what ends up being Stone Cold's last match for about 20 years. But it also does really feel like the end of an era for The Rock as well. And just for the WWE in general. Like, WrestleMania 17 does feel like when the Attitude Era was done, but this really buried it, right? Like, it was over now. It's a new era with Brock, with Kurt, with this new version of Triple H, I guess, and they're looking to build it that way. The night after WrestleMania 19, Goldberg debuts, and it is the debut that every wrestling fan wants to turn every other debut into, where The Rock cuts the promo saying, look, I've done everything. There's nothing left for me to do, and Goldberg comes out, and it's like, well, you haven't beat me yet. Every wrestling fan ever wants to turn every return or debut into that. It's like, look, hear me out. You're going to have Roman Reigns say, look, I've done it all. I've done everything. And then Kenny Omega comes out. It's like, well, you haven't beat me. Like, it was that well done. Goldberg ends up getting the win, and The Rock would leave again. And at this point now, he's parachuting in and out. And it's much more out than it is in. He comes back for WrestleMania 20 to team with Mick against Ric Flair, Randy Orton, and Batista. He would come back to help out Eugene, Mick Foley again, and then he's gone for a really long time. And he's introduced as the host for WrestleMania 27, and it starts a three-year feud with John Cena. And they set it up the night after WrestleMania 27 that these two were going to fight at WrestleMania 28. And it starts, like, The matches are not mat classics by any stretch of the imagination. Rock got hurt in one. And you could argue that maybe it held back some talent that it didn't need to. But it started a really good three-year build. The night after WrestleMania 27, they're like, look, I want you at next year's WrestleMania. And you had a year to build that up. And then Cena loses. And it starts this fight back, this clawing back for John Cena that ends with him winning the Royal Rumble. But in that time, The Rock has beat CM Punk for the WWE Championship, and so now John Cena has to overcome that barrier one more time, and he ends up getting it done. We get The Rock coming in for appearances here and there. He kicks off things at WrestleMania 30 with Hulk Hogan calling the building the wrong name, out there with Stone Cold Steve Austin. He wrestles the Wyatts at WrestleMania 32, hits the Rock Bottom and stuff on Baron Corbin and Austin Theory, and now he's back, and he is showing why he is and why he was the star that he was with his promo ability on the mic here leading up to WrestleMania 40. So, like, the legacy of The Rock is quite simply just of one of the greatest of all time. But I don't know if he gets enough credit for how unselfish he is. Like, just go back. Like, I know I kind of harped on it as we were going through. But go back and listen to who he helped along the way. Elevated Triple H. In a feud that elevated both of them, 100%. But helped Triple H become a main eventer. Helps get Mick Foley his WWF Championship in an amazing moment. Is there when The Undertaker debuts his American Badass character. Is the defining feud of Stone Cold Steve Austin's time in the WWF as the biggest draw in the history of the sport. Kurt Angle's biggest win comes against The Rock. Jericho's biggest win comes against The Rock. Goldberg builds, like, starts his run by beating The Rock. Brock Lesnar gets his first championship win by beating The Rock. Even something as simple as, like, WrestleMania 20, he's coming back in. It's the first WrestleMania for Randy Orton and Batista, and it's The Rock who is there. And you look at every generation of the WWF post-national expansion, and The Rock has faced guys from each one. Right? Like, and a lot of that is Hulk Hogan came back. But the golden era, it's Hogan. The new generation, I mean, he was a part of it for one. But then he ends up facing Bret Hart. The Attitude Era, him. You have the, what is it after that? It's the Ruthless Aggression era. Well, he beat John Cena. And now you're into this, like, PG era where he pops in, wrestles Bray Wyatt or whatever, but I mean, John Cena carries across a couple of those. So he's in there as well. And now he's in this new one, this TKO world that we are in now, this Attitude Era 2.0 that they're trying to do. And he's back in it as well. The impact of The Rock, I think, sometimes can be forgotten because he left for a while. And his movie career has outshined what he did in the World Wrestling Federation and in the WWE. And Stone Cold was always the biggest guy there. But I do think the lasting legacy of The Rock is the heights he was able to bring this business to and the people he was able to elevate along the way. And we're going to see that again, I think, this weekend at WrestleMania 40. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this Legacy Look. Tomorrow, we're going to be looking at what else is going on in the world of professional wrestling right now. Plus, a couple other WrestleMania thoughts I had as we lead into the big show. Friday's the big preview. We're going to break down night one and night two on that one. Also, talked a bit about it in the Stefon Diggs segment, where we're going to be talking about what's going on so far this offseason, how it affects fantasy, and how it affects the NFL draft. Thank you guys so much. Follow me on social media, like and subscribe, or subscribe and review wherever you're tuning in, and I'll talk to all of you later. I'm out.